Good morning, everybody.
Thank you for coming. Welcome, everybody. If I could ask you please to turn off your phones. If I could thank our sponsors for the academic year, the Shirim are sponsored in loving memory of Zeli Ben Kamen and Brana Bas Brandis, Ikronim Brocha. And we definitely thank the sponsors and wish there should be an aliyah for the neshamas. I'd like to talk to you about Chumrah. Not about Chumrahs specifically, although we will touch on a few, but I find that there are often two types of shiur. There's shiurim which is telling us all the things that we can't do on Pesach, and then there are shiurim that are telling everybody to calm down and not be so hard on themselves because a lot of what they don't do is not actually required not to do. I want to talk a little bit today about the good reasons and the bad reasons for adopting Chumrahs generally, because this is a very good time of year to discuss that. Because, why is it a good time of year? Because there is something that is called Chumrah de Pesach. Chumrah de Pesach. Or sometimes Chumrah de Chometz. It is a whole category which people recognize. Let me give you two examples, which we could have picked many different ones, but they're interesting examples because they bring up some of the halachic issues as well. And as we talk through this topic today, I want to not just talk in abstract about Chumrah, but bring in some of the Pesach issues that come in as we discuss this. Let's take an innocent-looking tshuva of the Rav Yaakov Emden, the Yaivetz, in number one. He says, Ashayla, Shalta, in Tzarech Litbol Kelim Haba'im Mimedina Tayam, Shenikram Porcelain. Do you have to take to the mikveh to toivel the kelim for that you import? They're called porcelain. V'domim leklis chuchis, and they're very similar in some ways to glass. They're glazed in some way. Meaning porcelain is made from clay, but it's produced in a certain way with an excessive heat in the kiln that gives it a glazed property. So he says, okay, I'll tell you, tshuva. Nirelei she'ein tzrichin tefila. I don't think that they need to go to the mikveh before you use them. She'nikachim min anochri, because even when they're bought from a non-Jew, lefi she'yadu she'asiyasa min achol, because they're made from clay. U'min adama, and anything made from clay, made from earthenware, does not need tefila. So it's a relatively straightforward shaila. They don't need to go to the mikveh. Now, there is a minhag these days to take some glazed pottery to the mikveh, but that's based on a time when the glaze was very thick, and effectively they were like glass kelim. But now there are many people who don't take the glazed pottery. Some do, I do, but some don't. Okay, fine. But then he says, the agav, and while we're talking about porcelain, let me tell you something else. Since this has come now to our attention, liyadon, I'm going to give you another kula. He's excited. He's given you one kula, one leniency. I'm going to give you another one, he says. I've heard from my father, the Chacham Tzvi, Mori Haga'on. Even though these porcelain china, the porcelain cups and plates are all made from earthenware, they are not compared to earthenware, that they don't pick up tam, they don't pick up taste. If you use them for fleishik, you could use them for milchik, he says. The aidi the shi, since they're very smooth, they're very shiny, even though they're made from chol, they're made from earthenware, loy bali, they don't pick up taste. Dumi de klis suchis, like glass vessels that don't pick up taste, the loy bali. We know glass doesn't pick up taste. We're high timer, and he brings from the shulchan aruch. Umin adin, and according to the strict letter of the law, b'shtifa ba'alma sagi lehu. All you need to do between milchiks and fleishiks or pesach and chometz in the porcelain vessels is just to give them a good rinse. Ela denahug alma lihishtamish b'chadashim. But everybody doesn't do that. Everybody buys new. Everybody has special crockery, special cups, special plates for Pesach and doesn't use their regular porcelain plates. Mishum chumrah de Pesach. And he just presents it as a known thing. Chumrah de Pesach. Meaning even though halachically in all other areas, he says, as far as he's concerned, you don't need separate dishes in porcelain for milchiks and fleishiks. I'm not getting into the psak lamaisa. Okay, can we all settle down a bit? It's a bit noisy today. Even though you don't need it, but Pesach you need it. Why do you need it? Chumrah de Pesach. It speaks for itself. So we'll see, what is Chumrah de Pesach? Why is that a thing? I'll give you another example which is brought down, and Yaakov brought you many examples. This is in the Piskei Arid, but it appears in many Rishonim. And he brings a halacha, Amarav, quotes from the Gemara. Chametz bizmanoi, bein biminoi, bein bishaloi maminu, oisva mashu. That chametz, when it gets mixed into anything, okay, whether it's min biminoi or min shaloi biminoi, meaning min biminoi means like with like, so let's say chametz flour mixed with Pesach flour, okay, or min b'she'enu minoi, or a little bit of chametz that gets into something which is not flour, Pesach big, bizmanoi, meaning on Pesach, also the mashahu. And we'll see what that mashahu is. Is it prohibited 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 1,000,000,000? Okay? Urav letamei, and I'll tell you exactly why Rav paskens this way. The Rav Shmuel, the Amri Travai, goes, the normal rule that we have is kol isurim sheba Torah. Whenever it comes to a Torah prohibition, the minan the mashahu. When one thing is mixed with another of the same type, then it prohibits even in the tiniest amount. If you put, let's say, treif milk into kosher milk, camel milk, camel's milk into cow's milk, even a drop, rest of the year, even a drop of camel's milk will treif it, even in a small amount. Shalai b'minam, but when it comes to a different thing, you put a little bit of schmaltz into milk by mistake, a little bit of meat gravy goes into milk. But no, same time, it's much more lenient. We only prohibit when you can taste. You can taste the actual foreign ingredient. Why are we more lenient with a different ingredient than with the same type? And so there are different ways of looking at this, because you can say that milk and meat are fighting each other. They're two different species. So when the milk overcomes the meat and you can't taste the meat anymore, so then it's bottled. Then you don't have a problem anymore. But milk and milk, they're not fighting each other. Milk and milk are supporting each other on a certain level. So even with a tiny, a little bit amount, then it's a problem. So that's during the normal, the rest of the year. The gazra shalai b'minan ata b'minan. But we make a gazera on Pesach, even with something which is loy b'minan, even with something which is a different type, mishum chumra de chametz. And here he calls it chumra de chametz. I'm not sure there's a difference between chumra de Pesach and chumra de chametz. But there's a reason. To have a chayiv kares, two reasons. Number one, chayiv kares, when you eat chametz on Pesach, very unusually, most of the treif food that we would ever come across in our daily lives would be a prohibited either midrabanan or midoraisa, but never chayiv kares. When do you come across a food which is prohibited with one of those 36 rare kares prohibitions? But Pesach chametz is one of them. The aser b'hana, and it's also aser b'hana, even the tiniest little bit. Is prohibited to eat and to get benefit from, not even to eat, but you can't even get benefit from chametz on Pesach. You can get benefits from milk and meat. You can get benefit from treif meat. You can sell treif meat. But you can't get benefit. Milk and meat might be a little bit different. It could be also the hanor, depending on how it's made. But you can't get benefit from chametz. So we have chumra de chametz, chumra de Pesach. It's presented as a fait accompli. Now, I have divided up three kinds of legitimate chumras on Pesach. When I say legitimate, I mean there are certain things that people do because they're just obsessive about it. And I understand that. There's a psychological need there, and there's a psychological solution there. It's not a halachic problem with a halachic solution. But there are three types of legitimate chumras, and I've divided them into halachic chumras, where we have to understand this is not just a chumra that you can pick and choose. It's built in to the halachic system on Pesach. It's different on Pesach. Then what I call minhag-based chumras, where this is not really part of the halachic system. Halachically, this thing is really kosher, but there's a minhag that we don't eat this or use this on Pesach. We'll see why that might be. And then what I've called social chumras. Social chumras don't have any halachic basis, but people do them anyway. Minhag-based chumras may not have halachic basis, but they have halachic support. There are poskim that come to support them. So we need to try and work out, when do they become destructive? When do they become a problem? When we're dealing with minhagim and chumras based on either social or custom issues, when can we turn around and say, actually, this is causing more problems than it solves? But we need to make sure that halachic chumras, we know, are real chumras. And when we say chumra, we don't mean like an extra thing that you do, but everybody has to do this on Pesach because it's built into the halachic system. So let me give you an example. Look at number three. We touched on this slightly last week, but let's look at it in a little bit more detail. Egg matzahs, Matzah's made with kneaded with not just water, or not with water, I should say, but with fruit juice or wine or eggs. Amar Rabba Bar Bachana, Amar Rish Lakish. Isa shenilusha b'yayin v'shemen u'dvash. This is a Gemara in Pesachim. Any dough which is kneaded with wine, with oil, with honey, ein chayav imalchim utzakaris. We're not bothered about that on Pesach. It can't become chometz. Flour plus water equals chometz if you leave it long enough. Flour plus eggs, or flour plus fruit juice, or flour plus wine is not chometz. The high time of the Reish Lakish, and this is the reason of Reish Lakish, Mishum Dahava Lehumei Peres, because it's fruit juice, it's not water. Umei Peres Ein Machmitzin. The Gemara is very clear. May Peres, fruit juice, does not create chometz. And yet, we have another Gemara a little bit later on, number four, the Hatanya. Ein Lashin Issa B'Pesach, you may not make dough on Pesach, B'Yayin, using wine, B'Shemen, or oil, Udvash, and or honey, the imlash, and if you did that, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, tisareif miyad, you have to burn it immediately. It becomes immediate chometz if you make mix flour with fruit juice or flour with wine immediately. Chachamim omrim yoichal. The Chachamim said it can be eaten, but you have to be quick. Meaning it's faster than 18 minutes. You've got to get in there. You've got to get it and eat it, because otherwise it will become chometz. So what's going on? You have two opposite Gemaras. One Gemara says that whatever you do with fruit juice and flour will not become chometz. Another Gemara says it's either immediate chometz or it's danger of being chometz and you better look after it. You don't have 18 minutes. You better eat it quick. This is on Pesach, obviously, not before Pesach. So how do you reconcile? How do you harmonize those two Gemaras? So here you have a very classic debate. The Sfaradim say that the reconciliation is as follows. May Peres, fruit juice with no water is fine. Fruit juice with water is the one that the second Gemara was talking about. That's more dangerous. The Ashkenazim say no. The difference is as follows. Look at number five. Rashi. Ein lashon esa issa. Why? What are we worrying about in this Gemara? The second Gemara we looked at, that you can't add fruit juice, apparently becomes chametz. Mipnesha karova umumaheres lahachmetz. Rashi says it's very quick, very close to becoming chametz. You don't have the 18 minutes. But ein adam yochel l'shomra. You can't stop it. You can't guard it. And when we had another Gemara earlier that seemed to say it was not a problem, like Hashach, that's not a problem. Why? Rashi wants to say that if you use May Peres, when it said you can, it didn't mean you can. It means it's not real chametz. You're not chav kares on that chametz. Okay? The law you have a chametz gomor, it's not chametz gomor, and a chametz nuksha. It's good to familiar ourselves with these ideas. Chometz nuksha means it's a type of chometz. It's a kind of sort of a messed up chometz. It's not chometz proper. Kalamara nuksha means it's bad. It's like a off chometz. And it becomes, you know, if you use may perish, you can't stop it. So according to Rashi, how do you reconcile these two Gemaras? Both Gemaras say you can't have it. But the one which was more lenient seems to say, well, it's just not kares, but it's still bad, and it's still prohibited, and you can't eat it. Maybe it's the raisa, maybe it's the rabbanon. But the Rambam and the Sfaradim say, no, you reconcile these two Gemaras in very different ways. The one that says it's okay means it's okay. The one that says it's not okay is talking about a case where you mixed in a little bit of water. That's when it's not okay. But if it's pure fruit juice, it's fine. So who do you follow? Shulchan Aruch, very straightforward, number 7. Look at number 7, the Rambam goes like the Sfaradim, basically says it's fine if you only have fruit juice, as long as you have no water. He says, of course, you can't use it for Seder night because it's not lechem oni. It's not poor person's bread, it is an enriched bread. Shulchan Aruch, number 7, may peris beloy maim. If you have water, fruit juice with no water in your kneading, ein machmitzin klal. They are not a problem at all. Umutzel echol bePesach, you can eat them with impunity on Pesach. Matzah shenilusha bemei peris, if it's made with honey or wine or fruit juice. Afilu shasa kolayom, even if you leave the dough to rise the whole day long, it's not a problem. Eat it on Pesach gezuntahe. But you're not yotze on Pesach because it's matzah shira. Fine. So then he comes in the next halacha. May beitzim. What if it's with eggs? V'shar mashkim or other kinds of juice. Kulam havi b'klal may peres. They're all fine. No problem. It's called a matzah shira. And then the Ramakama says, Umadinas Eila, in our countries, Einogin Lushba Meikeris. We don't use Meikeris. Va'afilu liktoi fa matzah, even to coat the matzah with Meikeris. Einogin Rakla Acha Fiasan, only later, etc. The Ein Lashonos, meaning he's telling you this is not just a Chumrah, this is a requirement. If you are Ashkenazi, you may not eat those matzahs made with Meikeris, matzah shira, im loy b'shas adchak, unless you're really in a bind. The tzarech echoyle, you have a sick person who can't eat regular matzah, or zakin hatzarech lezeh, or an old person who can't chew regular matzah, you can eat a matzah ashira. Okay? So here you have two clear halachic positions, the Sephardic position which is lenient, the Ashkenazi position which is halachically strict, but it's not something you can compromise on, it's not something you can say, oh, this is ridiculous, I'm not going to listen to that. It's halach, it's in Shulchan Aruch. Now, if we pasken, as we, Ashkenazim, I'm talking for Ashkenazim, that it's a problem, then why can you give it to an old person? Why can you give it to a sick person? You know, they also have to keep halacha. If it's prohibited. Is it hot in here? Yeah. Does someone know how to turn the air conditioning in? Can you ask the lady outside, sir, please, if she can turn on the air conditioning? A windows possibility. We can just start with the windows and see how we get on. Okay. But yeah, but the people next to the windows will then get... Okay. Shh. Okay. Why can we give it to elderly people? Because the later Meforshim explained, the Noda B'Yudah explains that really Rashi is the only opinion that says it's a problem. Really, even most of the Ashkenazi Rishonim say it's not a problem. They agree with the other way of looking at it. So here you have a Chumrah, which is a real Chumrah, but it's a very minority opinion Chumrah. So Ashkenazim stick to it, but we are allowed to be lenient, says the Ramah, in certain situations. So there you have two different opinions woven into the halachic system. They're not minag-based Chumrahs. There's different ways of reading those two Gemaras and how you harmonize them. That's one example. Let me give you another example. 18-minute matzahs. Why are matzahs so expensive? Some matzahs. Well, if you've ever been to a matzah factory, you'll know that what happens is, you know, they have the flour that comes out, a hand magically appears through a window with a bowl of flour, another hand pours water in it, and then they start the clock, and then they have to get those matzahs into the oven within 18 minutes. They have to knead them, they have to spread them, they have to do all the holes, and they have to get them in with 18 minutes. What happens after 18 minutes? The clock stops, and everything shuts down. Everything gets cleaned. All the machinery gets cleaned. All the surfaces get cleaned. And they spend 30, 40 minutes cleaning everything down, and then repeat the whole thing again. So for every 18 minutes of matzah making, there's at least a half an hour, 45 minutes of cleaning and avoiding any contamination. That's very expensive. You think about it, the whole factory is not in use for the majority of the time. Why do we do this? So have a look at number 8. It says, this is the Gemara. Amar Rava. Hilchasa, the halacha is as follows. Chometz bismanu bein b'minu bein shaloi b'minu osa b'mashu. That chometz on Pesach itself, bein b'minoi, whether it's in the flour with the other flour, bein shaloi b'minoi, osa b'mashu, it prohibits in the tiniest amount on Pesach, unlike a regular basar v'chalav, let's say, which is b'min shbe'ein mone in no same time. Karav, we pass it like Roth. Shaloi b'zmanu, however, chometz before Pesach, bein b'minoi, bein shaloi b'minoi, muta, there should be a bichl, it should be bottled. Meaning when we talk about chometz not being bottled, even in 1,000, even in 1,000,000, we talk about whether that really is 1,000,000 in a minute, that's only on Pesach. But chometz before Pesach is not really chometz. Today, there is no halachic category called chometz today. Because it's not Pesach. You can't call something chometz, you're going to call something chometz on Pesach. So if it gets mixed in, if a little bit of chometz thick flour gets mixed in to Pesach thick flour today, and it all gets cooked, and it's all mixed together, and you can't find it on Pesach, it should be fine. It's bottled. It's completely bottled. It's gone. So why is there an issue? Why do we need 18-minute matzahs? Let's make the matzahs, and then let's keep making the matzahs. And if there's a tiny, tiny little bit of dough that gets mixed in with all the other dough, and it's a little bit of tiny speck of chometz with all the... Who cares? It's all bottled. It's all gone. It's finished. What's the problem? So look in Rashi. Rashi explains that we're extra, extra strict. Shaloi bismanu, nami bismanu asa. Okay, so there is a one view, he says. If it's mixed in before, it's still asa bisman. The afa gav the isle l'rav b'kol isurim shaloi b'mino b'noisin time. Even though with a regular isurim, we're more makel. If you can't taste the prohibited thing, then halachically it's not relevant. Rav gaza b'chomis bismanu hoil b'karisu. We are very, very strict when it comes to on Pesach because of the Chiyuv Karis. The Afa gav the Bechalav v'dam loy gazer, and he makes a good point. He says, yeah, but what about Chalev? So excuse me. What about Chalev? What about prohibited fats? They're also Chiyuv Karis. What about blood? They're also Chiyuv Karis. Why don't we have these prohibitive restrictions, these chumras, when it comes to these other things which are Chiyuv Karis? And he says, Hasam hu de bedirim ineh. Because we're used to staying away from them. You see a speck of blood, you run a mile. You don't get close to chalev. Chalev never gets close to your kitchen. It's removed in the manufacturing process. It's far away. Aval chametz, lo bedirim ineh. But chametz, you're used to eating cookies the whole year round. Va'ochel kol yemei shana. There's nothing more natural than picking up a cookie and eating it. Unless, of course, you're gluten-free or on a diet, okay? Both of which are complicated, okay? But he says that we're more machmeh on Pesach, not just because it's kares, but because we're used to eating chometz, we're used to eating crumbs, and therefore we're extra machmeh. So even though, technically speaking, something which is bottle before chometz, before Pesach comes in, is bottle, and we don't have to worry about it, and it's only on Pesach that we have to worry about. Nevertheless, we're machme on many things, and the 18-minute matzah is a very good example. Even though technically speaking, the dough that will get mixed into it could argue that it's bottle, we don't want to rely on bittul. I remember Dan Lopian used to say in Shiurim, he says that you don't rely on bittul. We'll see in a minute, it could be what's called chayzeh niur. It could reawaken and come back to life. Well, maybe I'll mention that now. When you have a mixture of two things, which are what's called yavesh beyavesh, which means they are not all dissolved into each other. Let's say you have a chometzdik bizli mixed in with 1,000 pesachdik bizlis. Okay, don't know what the plural of bizli is, bits of bizli. And they all look identical. So you say, okay, on Pesach, clearly it would be prohibited. You drop one chametzdik bizli into 1,000 pesachdik bizlis, they're all prohibited. Before Pesach, it's bottle, because there's no such thing as chametz before Pesach. Ah, however, we pass in Shulchan Aruch Paskins that on Pesach itself, it's what's called chayziv neir. That's another chumrah of Pesach, that it comes back to life. The thing that before Pesach would have been bottled, would have been subsumed, is still there. There's a little bizli in there. You just can't see it, but it's there. And it comes back to life to haunt you, okay, on Pesach. And that's called chayziv neir, and we paskin that way. However, when it comes to lach balach, meaning you haven't got a piece in lots of pieces, but it's dissolved together. Two liquids, two a chometz and a Pesach thick liquid dissolved together. Or flour all mixed together. That's called lach balach. And even on Pesach, it doesn't come back to life. Dan Lopin used to say that they bake their cakes in a chometzdik oven. He said his wife bakes the cakes. I don't know if he baked them. I think his wife baked them. In a chometzdik oven. They clean the oven before Pesach, he said, and make sure there's no bits of chometz going to fall in, because bits of chometz, you know, either are not mixed in or they're chayziv in here, they'll come back to haunt you on Pesach. But if it's just the taste, it's the time, it's just the whatever the oven picks up from the chometzdik taste in the walls, he says, no problem whatsoever. It's all bottled b'shishim. It's not even there in terms of real mashut, and therefore that's what he does. And on Pesach, they don't use the oven. Now, I'm not paskening that you should do this, and you can ask your local Orthodox rabbi, he'll probably go faint and collapse if you tell him that that's what Dan Lopin used to do. But that is what Dan Lopin used to do.
When
he passed away maybe 15 years ago, something like this. I remember going to the Shurim in the 90s, and he was. This is what he explained that he did. However, there are many halakhic chumras. Not everybody is makhel like that. We'll see that there are many people who are machmeh, even lach balach. But certainly there are a number of chumras. And I brought them here on page 3. Real halakhic chumras, before we get into leniences. For example, we said on Pesach itself, the tiniest amount of chometz is not bottle, even in a million. We'll see if that really means a million. Where chometz falls into a mixture before Pesach, it is bottle, but it could come back to life if it's yavesh b'yavesh. Even if it's lach b'lach and it's all blended in, we'll see. It doesn't come back to life, but many people are not happy with it. Certain leniences that we normally have kashering, very narrow things that we need to clean. People say for Pesach, the Magen Avraham says you can't do it for Pesach. Another good example is tam lifgam. You all know this halacha. If you cook, by mistake, your milk in your fleishik pot, is the milk treif yes or no? What will the rabbi ask? When's the last time you used your fleshik pot? If you haven't used your fleshik pot for more than 24 hours, the halakha is very simple. The food is kosher, the pan is treif. Because you cook milk in your fleshik pot, but the milk itself is not treif, because all it's picked up from the walls of the vessel are tam lifgam. It's taste that has gone bad, if you like. On Pesach, we're not makel for this. Halachically, not a minhag, but halachically. If you cook on Pesach by mistake with your chometzdik pot, even if it hasn't been used for 24 hours, the food is treif. Okay? That's another chumrah. What happens if you don't know whether your pot was used within the last 24 hours? Milchiks and fleshiks. I picked a pot, but I don't honestly remember. Is this a pot I did use? Is this a pot I didn't use? What do we say? Stam kelim einu ben yomo. If in doubt, it's fine. Why? Because we can assume that most pots were made 24 hours, used 24 hours or more before. If you know specifically you use this pot, then obviously you can't assume that. But if you don't know, then it's fine. Not with chametz. If you don't know when this pot was last used, or I can't remember, maybe it was used yesterday, maybe it was a week ago, no good. We don't say, stam kelim einu ben yomo. Even if you say, I don't know, and then you use 10 minutes later, you say, oh no, I think I've remembered now. No, sorry, it's too late. It's too late. So there are lots of halachic chumras baked in, for want of a better word, into the halachic system. Then Rav Belsky explained that for Pesach, there is a halachic practice to be machmir for minority opinions in the Rishonim, opinions that we don't normally pass alike. On Pesach, we'll bring them out, and that is legitimate chumra de Pesach, chumra de chometz, because we're dealing with something that is kares, that is osa bahana, we're dealing with you can't benefit, that is something we normally eat. Okay? So there are lots of halachic chumras which are very much part of the framework. But then there are minhagim. These are minhagim that some of us have and some of us don't have. For example, gebrochts. We had a whole shir on gebrochts. I'm not going to have a repeat now all the stuff about gebrochts. The main source for gebrochts is the Alter Rebbe. You'll know the Lubavitchers are very serious about gebrochts. And the reason for gebrochts is either they're worried that unbaked flour inside the matzahs would not be baked properly, and then on Pesach would, when it came into contact with water, would become chometz. Because don't forget, the Shulchan Aruch brings that the maximum width of a matzah is a tefach. Your matzahs could be this thick. So if your matzahs are this thick, yes, there could be some little guy in the middle there that didn't quite make it and didn't get baked. Of course, now our matzahs are beaten to death and they're as thin as crackers, and there's much less chance of that happening. The second concern he had was that flour dust would coat the matzahs. When they make the matzahs, which are nice and pasty, I think they put them in the corner, and then they'd be making more flour and more matzah, and the flour dust would fly around and coat the top of the matzahs, and when you put that in your soup, oi, make chometz, because that's flour. Again, today that can't happen, given that everything is kept hermetically sealed and separate. But many people are machmir now for gebrochts. Even the Alter Rebbe says that that's only with water. When it comes to jam, it has something that doesn't have a water content. Maybe jam can have a water content. Something that's pure, not water. Butter. Avocado. Something like that. There's no water in it. He said, of course, you don't have to be machmir for gebrochts there. People are still machmir for gebrochts. Even when it comes to meperus, even though the whole origin of the minhag, if you like, was never for things which are meperus, people are strict on that as well. But again, is that a legitimate minhag? Yes, millions of people within Klal Yisrael keep that minhag, even though there's no obligation to keep that minhag. And we'll see, you don't laugh at other people's minhag. What about water sources used on Pesach? So there was a chumrah that came up in the Middle Ages and beyond, that the non-Jews would make beer in the local river, and they would throw out their hops and throw out the beer that they weren't using or whatever, and the river would have bits of barley, bits of beer floating in it. And of course, the Jews would then take from the water on Pesach. And who knows, it could be a water which was mixed with beer, mixed with barley. And we said it's osa even in a tiny amount. Chometz on Pesach is osa b'mashu. So what's a mashu? Is a mashu like even one in a million? Even one in a billion? So, as we all know, this has become a big political, football. And on Pesach, there are religious parties that insist, and this is, as far as I'm aware, what happens in Yerushalayim, that we do not get water anymore from the Knesset, because someone might have dropped some crumbs in the Knesset, and the water instead comes from the aquifers. In the Kinneret. Sorry, not the Knesset. The Kinneret. Sorry, you know what I've been thinking about when I'm not preparing my shirin. We don't get anything useful on Pesach from the Knesset. From the Kinneret, excuse me. Shh. We don't get water. We don't take water from the Kinneret. Because we're worried that this is the... Rabbi Avadia wrote a tshuva and said, this is just not a concern. It's just not a concern. That someone should drop a little bit of chometz on Pesach, meaning if they dropped it the week before Pesach, it's all dissolved. It's for sure bottled by millions and billions. A crumb on Pesach is going to make itself all the way through the system, filtered however many times it's filtered, and come out of my sack, my tap. There's no concern of that. Oh, okay. People insist on it. I saw once a recommendation that if you're worried about it, you can put a sock on the top of your tap so that you can filter it again. Preferably one that's been laundered. But you know, a lot of political capital is used by some of the religious parties to insist on this. Is this a chumrah which is worth... We'll see in a minute how to balance this. Is this something we really want to use that political capital for? Or are we worried about other things when halachically it's just not a problem at all on Pesach? Maybe it was more of a problem when you lived in the village and, you know, 3 hours before, the non-Jews had poured beer into the water and then you come and take from the water. It makes sense that it's a question. Today, there is no concern, but nevertheless, it remains a minhag. It's a valid minhag, but it's some ways there are downsides. We'll see how that works. Another one I brought here on the top of page 4, not eating dairy on Pesach. Some people say you shouldn't eat dairy on Pesach. Why? On the basis that the dairy foods are more likely to mix with chometz. Is that true? Not in today's world of kashrus supervision. There is even a halacha, and people misunderstand this halacha. Can you drink milk from a cow that has been milked on Pesach and fed chometz? What could the problem be? The chometz doesn't get from the cow's mouth into the cow's digestive system, into the cow's udders, and come out through the milk. There's no chometz in the milk. So why could there possibly be a problem? So look at number 10. Says the Mishnah Berurah, Uli inyan chalav shel behema she'ochelet chametz. What about milk on Pesach from an animal that's eating chametz? Afilu hi shel nachri, even if it belongs to a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is completely oblivious. Nechlek v'achroni b'zeh, there is a real machlokus on this. V'dasa prima godim lahater hachalav she'chalbo achame eis le'eis. And the prima godim says, no, I can only eat the milk, drink the milk from this cow 24 hours after the cow ate from the chametz. Me'eis le'esha achle l'chametz. V'yesh mekilim, and the others who are mekil and say, no, it's not a problem. Hafilu baba yami, even if the cow ate chametz this morning, if you milk it this afternoon, if the non-Jewish farmer milks it, it's fine. As long as im ocheled shachris v'arvis midvarim hamutarim. As long as you know the cow is regularly eating on the morning and the evening things which are not chometz, meaning the cow's diet is a mixture of chometz and not chometz, then he says you can drink the milk according to these lenient. What's going on here? What is going on here? What about the eggs for the chickens? You feed chickens chometz. The same idea. Can you eat the eggs that they lay on Pesach? Ah, so sometimes the eggs can have schmutz on them and you need to wash them, okay.
Not even inside.
Yeah, but again, is what's inside an egg cannot be chometz because the chometz can't get through the digestive system of the bird into the egg. What's going on here that people don't realize is a completely different halachic issue, which is there's a discussion in the Gemara that if you have an animal which is raised purely on food which is prohibited to benefit from, does that animal become prohibited to benefit from? Because its entire sustenance is from something that's prohibited to benefit from. That's got nothing to do with Pesach. That's got nothing to do with chometz. It's got nothing to do with, you know, any of the things we've been discussing so far. But it's a legitimate halachic question. And here the question is, so are we going to say since on Pesach, chometz is prohibited to benefit from, which it is, so this becomes an animal which now may be, on some level, prohibited to benefit from. We're not worried about chometz in the milk. We're worried about that other halacha. And some poskim are saying, no, that other halacha doesn't apply here. Certainly not if the animal has multiple sources of food, etc. Because then you can say what's called zev zeh gorim. But you can see here by... This is in the Mishnah Berurah. This is not some mishigas. The Mishnah Berurah is asking, maybe on Pesach we'll bring from another area of halacha and apply it to a halachic chumrah on Pesach, and this has found its way into different minhagim. Most people have no problem with this, and today almost everything we eat on Pesach has been milked before Pesach, and the eggs have been laid before Pesach, and therefore it's not relevant. But I brought you some others as well. Some people don't eat dry fruit on Pesach, that's a minhag. Why? Well, I don't know, they're not usually sure. Maybe it used to be processed with flour, or maybe it is today, maybe it's not today. People don't eat garlic on Pesach, they've usually got no clue why. Maybe it used to be made with beer. Somebody explained to me once that people used to hang garlic to dry, which my wife does. We have garlic hanging to dry, but our garlic hangs outside. You could hang garlic over your stove. And all year round, you're cooking on the stove, and the garlic is, it would pick up the taste of all the food. I'm saying, again, is that a real reason? I don't know, probably not. People should wash the eggs. Okay, I get it. There's schmutz on the eggs. Maybe it's chametz from the chicken coop. Some people peel all the vegetables in case something got on the vegetables. Some people only eat matzah on Seder night, not the rest of Pesach, which we had a whole shir on. Which on the one hand is a problem, because there may be a mitzvah to eat matzah all Pesach long, all 7 days, Vilna Gaon and others. On the other hand, you get this. The one thing in your Pesach cupboard, which is most likely in theory to be chametz, is your matzah. Meaning, how could your carrots really be chametz? You know, you wash them, they're clean, but your matzah, if it went wrong, is most likely to be chametz. Now, today, the chances of your matzah going wrong is so minimal because it's so supervised. Back in the day, it was Beryl and Shmerel who made matzahs down in the mat. Who knows what they were doing and whether they were doing it right, whether they were doing it wrong, etc., etc. And therefore, there are those who are nervous about eating matzah. Again, to quote Dan Lopian, I asked him once whether he has machine matzahs or round hand matzahs at his Seder. I remember asking him, I remember where I was on the street when I asked him, Dan Lopian, Alvar Shalom. And he said, of course, machine matzahs. So I said, why don't you like hand matzahs? It's much like traditional. It's like, so he looked at me, he says, I don't like chometz at my Seder. And basically, that's how he said. I said, okay, that's fine. And then there are the social chumras. Mishing. We won't eat in anybody else's house. Now, really, if you want to take that to its extreme, and logical extreme, means you're not going to eat anybody else's food, no matter someone's house, but even processed food, even food that you buy in a shop, you shouldn't be eating anything that's processed because you didn't make it. And indeed, Chabad, don't buy anything processed, pretty much. Maybe they'll make wine. You know, they won't make that wine for Pesach, okay? But they don't buy any processed foods. There's a very interesting article by Rav Yonah Rees about why this unfriendly minag of not mishing, of not eating with other people, arose, and whether it's legitimate, what it's not legitimate, etc., etc. But I call that more of a social chumrah rather than a halachic chumrah. Because it's not really based on any halachic issue. Anyone who is a Shomer Shabbos Jew has an emunah that their food is kosher the whole year round, and Pesach is no different. But we see, even based in halacha, some of these ideas. Have a look for a second in number 12. I'm going to bring you some really strong sources now as to where the halacha recognizes these extremes. Says the Be'er Hativ, quoted by the Alter Rebbe and others, Ha'arizal, the Arizal says, Kasav, Hanizaher mimashu chametz bePesach, somebody who is careful not to eat even a tiniest bit of chametz on Pesach, muftach lo shelo yechta kol hashana. He has an extra shmira against sinning for the rest of the year. Now, again, we're not naive and silly to think that just because you have every chumra in the book on Pesach, then you're going to be the most honest and God-fearing and person. But it doesn't do any harm, says the Ari. The chometz will be contaminating in some Kabbalistic, in some mystical way, and therefore that hakpada on Pesach can be a very strong sense. Maybe he means that the shmira, the seriousness that you take it, will go with you into the rest of the year, and you'll treat other halacha that way. That's not what he says, but that is something which is often quoted. Number 13, Shulchan Aruch. Nagu legarer hakatalim. People have minagim on Pesach to scrub the walls, to scrape the walls, the hakisaot, and the chairs. Shenaga behem chometz, just because they touched chometz. Now, guys, there's no chometz on the walls. If someone splashed chametz on the walls, it's not edible anymore. And even if it were edible, who's walking around licking your walls? But you know what? The Shulchan Aruch says, v'yesh lahem ama shiyismachu. He says, they're not crazy, these people. They have on what to rely. What's he talking about? Interestingly, the Mishnah in Midot talks about the minhagim in the Beis HaMikdash on Pesach and Sukkos. And it said on Sukkot and Pesach, they'd give a good clean, because it's going to be used by lots of people. But on Pesach, they'd repaint everything before Pesach. You see? So if you turn around and say, your wife's driving you with sugar, we need the house painted before Pesach, so she can say, look, the Beis HaMikdash, I'm sure it looked very nice, but they still repainted it before Pesach. So the Shulchan Aruch is saying that there isn't what to rely on many of these cases. Number 14, Mishnah Berurah. When he says Yesh Amal Sheyismachu, Rod Salima says the Mishnah Berurah, De'ein Lil Og Al Aminag. Don't mock other people's Pesach Minhagim. Liman say Shehu Minag Shtus. Says don't say it's a Minag Shtus. The Chumri Yisera, and it's an extra Chumra. Don't be too rooted in that, because he explains in the Shasi number 15, Ha'inin Yisrael Kadoshim Haim. The Jewish people are very Kadosh. V'Nagu LaHachma Afilu B'Mashu, and they have a tendency for Chumra in a positive way. So let's talk about that. Let's now talk for 20 minutes about the back and forth. Why would you want to be Machmir? Why is it a positive thing to be Machmir? So I'm going to give you 6 or 7 reasons why being Machmir is very good, and 6 or 7 reasons why being Machmir can be quite dangerous. Okay, so let's do these, you know, one after the other. So the place to start with this is Mesilas Yesharim. Look at number 16. Haprishas Bedinim, if you want to be Machmir, and pull away from any potential danger when it comes to halacha, hula hachmi behem tamid. That means you should be machmir always. Mesilas Yesharim is Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato. L'chush afilu l'divrei yochid. We'd be concerned for minority opinions, but machlokas. Im tamo nira. And we'll get back to this. If the reason seems clear to you, we'll see what that is in a minute. So even if you know, especially, maybe only if you know that that's not really the halacha, u'betznai shelo yeh chumra kula. And this is introducing our second part here. It's only on condition that your chumrah doesn't result in a leniency. Because sometimes people lose all perspective, and their legitimate chumrah, which shouldn't be mocked, actually causes more of a problem than it solves. Well, lahachmir besfeikis. But if you can be authentic about it, you should be machmir in all questions. Afilu b'mokum she'ev shel hakel behem. Even when you would want to be, you could be lenient. Ukvar biyarnu lanu chachameinu. And the rabbis have explained to us, Mami Yecheskel, when the Yecheskel says in the Navi, Hine nashi lo metuma'a. My soul never became tame. What is he talking about? Not tumah in terms of sort of gross actual halachic tumah. He means shalai achalti mi behema shaharu b'chachamim. I never ate a piece of meat on which there was even a shaila. The minute there's a shaila, says Yechezkel, I don't want it. V'lo achalti mi basar koskos. Now this has nothing to do with couscous. Koskos is when somebody has an old, dying old cow, which is almost certainly a trefa. And you look at it and you think, this cow's got minutes, never mind hours. And someone says, shecht, shecht, kos, kos, means shecht it quickly. Because if you wait for 10 minutes, it'll die and then you're stuck. Meaning, I don't want to eat that cow. Even if it's technically kosher. The calls them mutahu. All of these examples are mutah. Minadin, they're halachic mutah. Vadai, they're clearly mutah. Clearly permitted. Elo ihu de achme anashay, but this person wants to be machme on themselves. Ukvazachati lemana she'ein lil mubmashay huta al kol Yisrael. Just because for all the rest of the Jews it's okay. Le perushim, but for people who want to be extra careful. She'ej lehem laharchik minakiyo. They want to avoid anything negative. Minadoimela uminadoimela doime. Anything negative, anything which looks like negative, looks like. Etc. And he brings the example here about Mar Ukva, and I'm going to read it inside. He kept from one meal to the next, Fleishik's Milchik's, even though his father, who he praises enormously, kept 24 hours between Milchik's and Fleishik's and Milchik's. 24 hours. And he says, my father was like wine, and I am like vinegar, the son of wine, but I don't keep that minag, I don't keep that chumrah. He didn't feel it was a binding chumrah, but he praised his father. He didn't critique his father for this. And therefore, I'm going to bring you 5 or 6 reasons why Chumrah is a very positive thing. It could be a mitzvah doraisa, ahavas Hashem. I love God, a person might say, so much. I'm so excited, enthused, positive about the halachic system, meaning the halachic system represents to an Orthodox Jew Dvar Hashem. Okay, it's complicated, and there's back and forth and analysis, but at the end of the day, it's Dvar Hashem. Why would I not want to get deeper and deeper into this halachic system, and my urge for Chumrah might come from a place of Ahavas Hashem? Of course, the halachic system is also leniency as well as stringency, but it could come from Ahavas Hashem or Yiret Shamayim. I don't want to take a chance. Why would I risk it? This is too awesome. The responsibility is too great. I sometimes give a mashal. If you come to my house and you say, you know, I have a headache, do you have a Tylenol? And I say, no problem, go upstairs, you know, in my medicine cabinet, there's a little pot. I take them out of the pot, but it's okay. The Tylenol are on the left. But don't take the little white pills on the right, because they're arsenic. And I have arsenic. Why do you have arsenic? Good question. Okay, cyanide. They're cyanide. They look a bit similar, but don't worry, because the Tylenol's on the left and the cyanide's on the right. I'm pretty sure the arsenic's on the... I'm 99.9% positive. All of a sudden, like, your headache is gone. No headaches. I'm not taking any chances. What do you mean? No, but come on. It's a 0.01% chance that you'll take the cyanide. Yerushalayim, I'm not going to risk it. If it might be treif, it might be treif. I don't want to eat it. Kadoshim to you, I want to push not just for the letter of the law, but the spirit of the law. Okay? Also, Vasita Yashavatov, so too may Nadam Mechaveiro. The Kafachayim says, number 17, you may or may not agree with the statement, but he says, Kol Ish Asher Nishmaso Zaka, anyone who has a pure soul, Zaka Biyoter, very pure soul, Tava Nafshu La'asot Chumrot. He can tell that because he's always trying to do Chumras. The Chasidut Biyoter, he's trying to go extra. The Kol Asher Ein Nishmaso Metuken Kol Kach, and anyone whose soul is not so developed and perfected, Tava Nafshu Lelech Achra Kulis, he's trying to do leniences. This is a good way to test yourself, says the Kaf HaChaim. Sfaradi Posek, Rabbi Yaakov Sofer, early 20th century. If you're constantly looking for leniences, he says, that may be a problem in your neshama. Why are you constantly looking, he says, for chumras? F2, to avoid safek, the briskers. The briskers don't really accept the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, there's this opinion and this opinion, and through the halachic process, we pass an X. You can rely on the Shulchan Aruch. You can go to Shamayim after 120 years and say, I didn't decide, I relied on the Shulchan Aruch. The briskers are worried, well, what if he's wrong? What if he's wrong? What if when I go to Shamayim, you know, they turn around to me and say, well, I'm sorry you relied on the Shulchan Aruch, because that's not the halacha as we pass it in heaven. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein would say, well, that doesn't matter. That is the halacha like they're passing it on earth, and therefore you can be completely confident that the briskers say, no, how do I know? There's a very famous story that's brought down by the famous book, My Uncle the Nitziv, which was based on the Makor Baruch of Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein. He says, the Bochrim in the Lojan used to go first night Seder to Rav Chaim Briska, and second night Seder to the Nitziv. Okay, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, the other Rosh Hashiva. So the first night when they were with the briskers, they waited till the latest possible time when it was nachts to make sure that there was no question they had an obligation to eat. And they ate the biggest possible shear of matzah in the smallest possible amount of time. And they stuffed it all in. And then at the end of the Seder, Rav Chaim Briska went, who knows whether we even did any mitzvahs tonight? The second night they would go to the Nitziv, and he started a normal time, and he did a normal shir, and he'd eat benachat, and at the end he'd say, Baruch Hashem, we did so many mitzvahs this evening, Baruch Hashem. Like two different world views, looking at things in different ways, okay? The irony is that by mistake they switch their graves, and the gravestone of one is on the other, and it's like that in Warsaw Cemetery. It's an interesting. I mean, they were colleagues, they weren't enemies, but nevertheless they're very different. So avoiding Suffolk, the Briska approach, Tam or Nire. What do we see in the Mesilas Yesharim? If you learn something and it seems that way to you, let me explain what he means. Let's say you learn a sugya, you learn through a halachic issue in the Gemara. And you learn it, and as you learn it, you think, the answer has to be this. It has to be X. This is how I learn the sugya. And you look it up in the Shulchan Aruch, and you see, it's not like you said, it's more lenient. But then you say, but look, my view is, just making this up, the Ritva's opinion. He reads the Gemara like I read the Gemara, like I assumed everyone had to read the Gemara, and he comes out stringently. So that's called Tamo Nira, meaning your neshama is in the right sort of vibe with the way the Ritva learns the Gemara. That's a great reason for you to be Machmir, said the Mesilas Yesharim, because your neshama is in sync with that strict opinion. You didn't even realize it, but that's how you learn the sugya. Oh, okay, the Shulchan Aruch comes out more lenient. Okay, but clearly you have a natir, you have a connection with the more Machmir opinion. Then look at number 18, beautiful. There's a whole Gemara that talks about you should have your special mitzvah. The Amoraim are discussing, number 18, Amar Rav Nachman. Tasili, I should get my Olam Haba, he says, the Kiyam to Shalosh Shudas B'Shabbos. I kept Shalosh Shudas. I ate Sudash Shemshit punctiliously. Amar Rabbi Huda, Tasili, the Kiyam is Iyun Tfilah. I think I should get my special place in Olam Haba because of my focus in Tfilah. Amar Rabbi Huna, Bray the Rav Yeshua, Tasili, the Loi Segina Arba Amas B'Gilui Rosh. I never walked, says Rav Huna, I never walked 4 Amas without my head covered. Amar Rav Sheshis, Tesi li dikiyam is mitzvah tefillin. My thing was tefillin, says Rav Sheshish. I'm a Rav Nachman, Tesi li, dikab is mitzvah tzitzis. My thing was tzitzis. Meaning everybody has their special mitzvah, says the Ritva, number 19, to explain this. Perush, afal pi shehaya shomer ha'acheres, even though each of these rabbis kept the other mitzvahs as well to the best of their ability, haya zahir bezola associate kakol dikdukea. There should be one mitzvah that you do with every little tiny detail. V'chukoteha legamre. Shekein kol tamid chacham roi lo likvoa atzma mitzvah achad kiyuma kehilchata. Meaning we all do our best whenever we can, but we make mistakes and we take shortcuts every now and then. He says, but there should be one mitzvah in life, which is your mitzvah. And when you go to Olam Haba, you can turn around and say, I never took any shortcuts on that mitzvah. I did everything b'chol adikdukim. So you can find whichever is the mitzvah that connects with you. And that's the real idea, that you should keep all the mitzvahs, but there should be your special mitzvah. Hakanasas Orchim, etc. The last two things I brought you here, sometimes the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says, the halacha is X, but ha-machmi tavo alav brocha. But if you want to be machmi, you get a brocha. Okay? Who doesn't want to have a brocha? So maybe it's saying, sometimes there are reasons you're not allowed to be machmir, but here you are, and you're going to get a brocha. But there's no question, ha-machmir tavo alav brocha is something that appears in many, not all cases. And sometimes it appears in the wording called baal nefesh yachmir. Someone who is a baal nefesh should be machmir. And what's a baal nefesh? The original context of that in Mishlei, a baal nefesh is someone who eats a lot of food. He's got a healthy appetite. But all by the time of Chazal, it became known as someone who's concerned for their soul, a baal nefesh, someone who's on an extra level, should be machmir. But there again, how does that work? I remember Bobby Hill, Zichron Yifrocha, who was a teacher in London, and a very master Talmud Chacham, master teacher. And I remember him often saying, a baal nefesh should be machmir. But who am I to consider myself a baal nefesh? Which leads us into the next part, which is there could be a certain arrogance here. Like, extra specially from people should be machmir, and that's me. Really? Do you know yourself? When's the last time you looked in the mirror? You think you're a baal nefesh? So that's like leads us nicely into the dangers of chumras. And, you know, we only have 6 or 7 minutes, but I do have a little bit of time to explain these. Maybe rather than reading them all inside, we look at them sort of more outside. The Gemara. Here's a major danger. First of all, there always has to be a balance. The 21 is a source in Mesillas Yesharim. Again, it continues from what we said before, which is whenever there is a question of an extra, a chumrah, a person always has to weigh it. Meaning when it comes to the bottom line halacha, if it's osur, it's osur. If it's prohibited, it's prohibited. But if you want to do extra, then you better think it through. And if the net loss will outweigh the net gain, says the Mesillas Yesharim, then you shouldn't do it because you're trying to do more and you ended up doing less in another area, either because it affects someone else negatively, it affects you negatively in the long term, you'll never keep it up, etc. And therefore, there are many places brought down where Chumrah is positively dangerous. I brought you here 22 and 23, the very opening mitzvah in Maseches Brachas, where Beis Hillel say, you can say the Shema any way you like, any direction, you can be standing up, you can be sitting down, you can be lying down, whereas Beis Shammai says no. In the morning you have to stand up, uvekumecha, and in the evening you have to lie down, b'shochbecha, you have to lie down. Remember that Mishnah, Rabbi Tarfon comes along and says, well, I was on the road and I had to say Shema, so I got off my horse and I lie down by the side of the road, because why not? You know, let's do an extra chumrah. Let's be machmir like Beis Shammai. But I nearly got attacked because, you know, I was lying down at the side of the road. And Beis Hillel turned around to him and says, it's on your own head. You are not allowed to be machmir like Beis Shammai, because there are some times when being machmir actually undermines the halachic process. The halacha is not like Beis Shammai. Therefore, if you want to say, well, who cares? Beis Hillel don't care if you lie down. It's not like you're going against Beis Hillel. It's just an extra. Why not do that as well? No, you are undermining the halachic process. You're setting precedent for future mistakes. Sometimes you're not allowed to be machmir. Top of page 7, the Pisrei Tshuva brings down a very interesting debate. He says that what if you want to be machmir because you don't like this idea of bittel b'shishim? Yeah, you ask a shayla, I dropped a little bit of meat in my milk. Is it kosher? The Rav says, yeah, it's kosher. And you say, why is it kosher? I drop meat in the milk. Says the Rav, it's batel b'shishin. There's less than a 60th. And you say, well, that sounds ridiculous. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to drink something which is, there's an, even a tiny, I don't believe in batel b'shishin. That's a problem. Because you've just basically made a statement that undermines the halakhic process. Meaning your search for stringency has actually put you in conflict with a key halakhic system, and you've become a heretical, it's a heretical rejection of the halakhic system itself. Therefore, the sometimes you're not allowed to do that. It's not okay. It's not neutral. It actually does something which is a problem. Number 26. Tani Chizki, call Misha who potter midavar, someone who is exempt from something, the osehu, but they say, I'm going to do it anyway. Nikra Hedyad is called a fool. Why are you sitting in the rain in the sukkah? There's no mitzvah. There's no mitzvah in the rain. You're potter. Oh, I like sitting in the rain. Nazir, who likes sitting in the rain? Says, you're a fool. You're a Hedyad. On the other hand, the Prima Gadim says, no. Some situations, sitting in the rain, Gene Kelly, okay, new only take, okay. That sounds more for Purim. The Prima Gadim says, no, if it's a legitimate chumrah, define legitimate, an opinion, maybe it is legitimate, you're not called a hedyad. Only in the situation where there's just no halakhic base, so then you go and work out, is there any halakhic advantage of sitting in the sukkah in the rain? Look at the sugya, is it valid or you know, is it really a masa hedyat? Are you just being foolish? H2, where it will result in a kula. Being your machmir in kashrus, but you're lenient with your kibbut ava'im. You're driving your parents crazy. I tell this to my students. I don't need this heksha. I don't need that heksha. I don't need this heksha. Good. You're stringent when it comes to kashrus. And you're very lenient when it comes to honoring and respecting your parents. That's not okay. You're machmir in gebrochts, but you're mekel in simchas yontzef. My whole yontzef is consumed in an OCD, I don't know what I'm doing, that's a very problem. You're machmir in gebrochts and you're making embarrassing other people. There's a meiser with the Rebbe before, the sixth Rebbe of Lubavitch, where they were having a big suda and somebody there didn't realize gebrochts. They dipped the matzah in the borscht. And all the chassidim are going nuts. And the Rebbe hears at the end of the table what's happening, what's going on. And they said, there's chometz at the table. They dipped the matzah in the borscht. So the Rebbe said, better the matzah should be read than the face of this poor fellow should be read because he didn't realize that there was a problem with gebrochts. Okay, you can be machmir and make at the same time. You're machmir in Pesach cleaning when it's not really cleaning, and then you're makel in Simchas Yontzef, etc. And I brought you many examples as well. Sometimes, and I wish we had a little bit more time, I should have really done some of this, maybe it's two shirim rather than one, but I brought you some other areas as well. Sometimes to be machmir just shows that you're ignorant. And the Kuzari brings this down. Someone asked, when he says that someone would ask the king, as it were, in the Kuzari's analysis, why are the Karaites so much frumer than you? They're more particular, they're more machmir. He says, because the Karaites don't know what they're doing, he answered. We don't need to be machmir because we're comfortable. And sometimes frumkeit and extra chumras comes out of just a sense of, like, I just don't know what I'm doing. If you don't know what you're doing, it's easy to say no to everything. But that's not called a chumrah. That's called ignorance. That's called amaratzis. Anyone can say no. That's why the Gemara says, Kaich de hetera adif. Saying yes is definitely stronger than saying no. How do I know if your chumrah is just based in ignorance? And then there are all the sources in 31 and 32 that talks about being machmir in something when you're going to look like an arrogant person. The Magen Avraham brings down, if you're machmir, if you're strict, and your Rebbe is lenient, then we put you in chayra. Because who are you to be stricter than your Rebbe? Even if you're Lashem Shamayim, it's not okay. It's not an appropriate expression of frumkeit. Rav Moshe, the famous tshuva on blended whiskies, says, I think it's better to drink whiskey which is not blended. He's not talking about blended in the modern sense. Mixed with sherry. They used to mix sherry, treif sherry in. And someone produced whiskey with a hechsher. He said, Kol HaKavod, I think it's great, and I definitely won't normally drink the whiskey which is blended with the sherry because it's relying on colors. Even though I hold that it's kosher, he said, and I definitely will drink it when I'm served it and I need to make a lachaim because I don't want to look too frum together with this family who are making a lachaim on this whiskey. You don't want to look frum. You're Rav Moshe Feinstein. What do you got to worry about? They know that you're the Gadol HaDor. He says, no. It would be Yura, and therefore there are many reasons why the adoption of chumras could be negative. As I say, either it's from insecurity, or it's from being lenient in another area. And just finally, just one word before we start. Rav Kook has a beautiful tshuva. The tshuva, you should read it in depth. I didn't bring it on the sheet. The tshuva that deals with kidneyot oils, where he wants to say that oils from kidneyot are not prohibited. And he says a few things there. And he says, Kabbalistically speaking, there's actually a problem being machmir, where the halacha doesn't require it. He brings a whole Kabbalistic idea. And he also brings an idea that when the Chazal made gezeiras, they were not allowed to make fences around fences. That's one of the limitations on making rabbinic fences. And says, therefore, there is actually potentially a Torah prohibition making too many fences, and you may cross that line. Therefore, there's no safe zone. It's not safer to be more machmir because you may actually be causing a problem. Okay, and then we've looked at that quite quickly, but you can take the sheet away and look at it in more depth on your own. I wish you all a chag kosher v'sameach, lots of simcha as well as lots of kashrus, and we should all meet, please God, after Pesach.
The classic line starts on Purim.